Three students from Westlake High had gone missing in the past month. The police were out on the hunt. Some said they'd been spotted at the abandoned mall on Route 16. Others whispered about a van circling the neighborhoods around school. Our parents started driving us to class. Teachers patrolled hallways during breaks, and the district implemented twice-weekly lockdown drills just to be safe. The first thing I noticed wasn't his face, it was the smell. Copper and chemicals, like pennies soaked in bleach. Our regular history teacher had been out sick for 3 days. This substitute, Mr. Rowan, carried himself differently from other teachers. While he wrote on the whiteboard, his sleeve inched up, revealing a dark stain his hasty washing hadn't quite removed. I was still staring, trying to piece it all together, when the lockdown alarm blared. The classroom froze. This wasn't the half-hearted monthly drill tone. This was the shrill, pulsing wail they'd only tested once, the one that meant inescapable danger.
"Everyone under your desks," Mr. Rowan said, unnervingly calm. He didn't look one bit surprised.
As we scrambled for cover, I caught a glimpse through the classroom window. Police cars silently pulling into the parking lot, officers crouching behind vehicles, weapons drawn. My heart hammered against my ribs. My uncle's a cop. Those weren't positions for a drill. Mr. Rowan didn't follow protocol. He didn't check the lock or turn off the lights. Instead, he pulled down the blinds with deliberate slowness, watching the police through the narrow gap. Something changed in his face, a tightening around the eyes, a twitch at the corner of his mouth. That's how I knew they were here for him. I reached for my phone, but his hand clamped down on my wrist. His grip was crushing, nothing like a teacher's warning touch. "No phones, Hannah." His whisper had raised the hair on my neck. "I know you're a good girl." We hadn't done roll call. His other hand emerged from his pocket, holding a hunting knife. Not a small pocket knife, but a serrated tactical blade at least 6 inches long. The kind hunters used to gut deer. The fluorescent lights caught its edge as he turned it slowly.
"Everybody's phones now."
Tyler caught my eye from beneath his desk. His jaw was set, and I recognized the look. The same one he'd had before breaking his arm jumping off Miller's Cliff last summer. Reckless determination. I shook my head fractionally.
"You know what's funny?" Mr. Rowan said, collecting phones in a metal trash can. "How easy it is, walking in with a briefcase and a smile."
He chuckled.
"No one checks. No one inquires. You just say you're from the district office, and they hand you a classroom full of kids."
A soft whimper came from somewhere in the room. He whirled toward the sound, nostrils flaring.
"Shut up!"
His voice changed, dropping any pretense of normalcy.
"Or I'll give them something to find besides the janitor!"
Janitor? I froze. Mr. Keller had been missing since Monday. Suddenly, a knock at the door made everyone flinch.
"Mr. Rowan?"
Miss Riley's panic-filled voice boomed. In one fluid motion, he grabbed me, pressing the knife against my throat while pointing it threateningly at the rest of the class. His eyes swept the room with a promise that screamed, "Make a sound, and I start with her." Through the door's small window, I could see only Miss Riley's silhouette, not her face. She couldn't see what was happening inside, either.
"They're evacuating the East Wing. They found..."
Her voice dropped.
"Just stay put until officers clear your hallway."
Found what? My pulse roared in my ears.
"All present!"
he called back. The moment she left, my chair creaked. I had shifted. His head snapped, pupils dilated so wide his eyes looked black.
"You moved," he said, voice eerily childlike. "No one's supposed to move during lockdown."
He lunged, grabbing my hair and yanking me up. The knife pressed under my jaw, cold metal against my pounding pulse.
"All of you," he commanded. "Against the wall."
My classmates stood up, trembling.
"You're coming with me,"
he whispered in my ear, his breath hot and sour. Suddenly, Tyler launched himself from behind a desk, swinging the metal leg he'd twisted off of his chair. It connected with the substitute's knee with a sickening crunch. The man howled, slashing wildly. The blade caught Tyler's arm, opening a gash that immediately bloomed crimson. But the distraction was enough. I slammed my elbow into his ribs and broke free.
"Everyone get him!"
I lunged for the classroom phone, jabbing the emergency button.
Room 207!
I screamed into the receiver.
He's got a weapon! He's not a teacher!
The substitute's face contorted with rage. He limped toward me, knife raised high.
I've gutted people for less!
He snarled, lunging forward, but Tyler tackled him from behind. They crashed into desks, a tangle of limbs and blood and fury. Other students joined in now, desperation overcoming fear, throwing books, chairs, anything to slow him down. The door burst open. Two officers rushed in, weapons raised, shouting commands that blurred together in my adrenaline-soaked brain. The substitute was pinned, cuffed, dragged upright. As they pulled him past me, he turned, his face inches from mine, and smiled. Promising, terrible, like a death mask carved from flesh.
You disappoint me, Hannah,
he whispered, so softly only I could hear.
I know where you sit, what you smell like when you're afraid.
They shoved him forward, but he looked over his shoulder, mouthing two words.
Next time.
Later, we learned the truth. Samuel Ketch was a man wanted in three states for crimes against kids and teenagers. He'd walked out of a maximum security psychiatric ward 2 days earlier, leaving three orderlies dead with their throats cut, the same way they'd found Mr. Keller, our janitor, stuffed behind the boiler in the East Wing basement. The real substitute had been found in the trunk of his own car, 3 miles from the school. Sometimes at night, I can hear that soft click of the box cutter. I've switched schools, but I check the substitute's cuffs every time a regular teacher is out. I keep replaying that moment in my head, the moment when Liam let go of my hand, the moment I should have held on tighter. It was supposed to be a normal Friday, Mr. Carter droning on about quadratic equations while I texted Liam about weekend plans. Just 2 more periods until freedom. No one saw it coming. Ryan had always been strange, quiet, lurking in corners, staring at people for too long, but he was just another weird student at our high school. People made fun of him, but I tried my best to be nice to him. We exchanged smiles a few times in the hallway until Liam told me that he was getting creepy vibes from him, and I stopped looking his way. Then, he was lost in shadows. Until that day, the school intercom came to life. Attention, this is a lockdown. This is not a drill. Please go to the designated safe areas immediately. At first, no one moved. Then I saw Ryan sprinting past our door, a huge knife in his hand. His hands were dripping red. The hunting knife in his grip glistened under the neon lights. But his eyes, God, his eyes, they were completely empty. Black pools that seemed to soak up the light around them. His lips were curved into a smile that gave me goosebumps. Someone was screaming. Mr. Carter rushed to the door.
It's jammed!
He shouted, panicked. Bang! Ryan slammed against the door, laughing, a high, childish giggle that didn't match the blood smeared across his face.
Let me in!
He sang, voice lilting like a twisted nursery rhyme.
Let me in or I'll blow your pretty little heads off!
Liam grabbed my arm.
Noah, help me!
He yelled, dragging a heavy desk toward the door. We slammed it against the frame, just as Ryan's knife slipped through the gap, narrowly missing my eye.
I can smell your fear, Noah baby!
Ryan sniffed through the crack, inhaling deeply.
It's delicious!
His eye pressed against the small window in the door, bloodshot and unblinking.
I've been practicing for this day, Noah. The others didn't scream enough. I know you'll shriek.
A chill ran down my spine as his tongue darted out, licking blood from his lips. Suddenly, we heard shouts in the hallway. Teachers and security dashed in, momentarily distracting the monster. Ryan stepped back, tilting his head like a curious animal.
Hide and seek. He whispered. Ready or not.
Now!
Liam hissed, and we yanked the desk away and fled. The hallway was a nightmare. Sprinklers drenched everything, making the floor slippery with pinkish water. Bloody handprints smeared one wall where someone had dragged themselves away. 2 freshmen huddled by the lockers, clutching bleeding wounds.
He cut us and then just watched,
one whimpered.
said something about loving our pain.
Halfway down the hall, I saw Ryan standing motionless at the other end, knife raised, head tilted at that unnatural angle. He removed his hoodie, revealing a vest covered with wires and bulging packages.
No more running,
he called, voice echoing. Then softer, almost intimate.
I need to see inside you, Noah.
We ran. Liam slipped, crashing into the lockers. Before I could help, Ryan was there, moving unnaturally fast, knife slashing. I swear his feet barely touched the ground. I ripped a fire extinguisher from the wall and swung it, connecting with Ryan's shoulder. He didn't even flinch, just smiled wider.
That tickles.
He giggled, eyes dilating.
Want to see what real pain looks like?
He lunged at Liam, who barely dodged the blade. By then, we had reached the emergency exit. Through its window, red and blue lights flashed. Help was waiting. Liam turned to me, face pale with terror.
You go first,
he said, voice shaking.
No, we're going together.
I grabbed his wrist and he shook his head.
Don't waste time, hurry.
I stepped through the door, cold night air hitting my lungs. I turned back, reaching for Liam, our fingers connecting. That's when I saw Ryan behind him, appearing like a shadow. His eyes met mine as his arm plunged forward.
No!
I screamed. The knife entered Liam's back. His eyes went wide, mouth opening in a silent gasp. Ryan's face transformed with pleasure, eyes rolling back slightly as he twisted the blade. His tongue darted out again, tasting the air like a snake.
Beautiful,
he sighed, as if witnessing something transcendent. The cops were running toward us now. But Ryan wasn't done. The blade flashed again, driving into Liam's side with a wet, sucking sound. I couldn't let go of his hand. I couldn't.
Just hold on. Don't let go,
I begged. Blood bubbled from Liam's mouth, but somehow he managed to smile.
Live your life, mate,
he whispered, his fingers going slack in mine. And then he let go. I screamed as his hand slipped from mine, as his body crumpled onto the concrete. The cops tackled Ryan, who didn't resist. He just stared at me over their shoulders, smiling that unnatural smile.
I'll see you in your dreams, Noah,
he said, voice carrying impossibly over the chaos. Hours later, I sat on the curb outside the school, wrapped in a shock blanket. Someone had washed Liam's blood from my hands, but I could still feel it, sticky between my fingers. The paramedics couldn't save Liam. He was gone before they even closed the ambulance doors. As dawn broke, I stared at his bloodied school ID, trying to focus on his smile rather than Ryan's words. Sometimes at night, I still feel Liam's hand slipping from mine. I wake up grasping at air, trying to hold on tighter this time, but I can't. And somewhere, in juvenile detention, Ryan waits. The guards report he doesn't sleep, just sits perfectly still, staring at walls, smiling. Sometimes, in the darkest hours of the night, I swear I can feel him watching me through the miles between us. And in my dreams, he whispers that he's coming for me, that he wants to finish what he started, that he needs to see inside me. I was halfway through my second cup of coffee when the call came. It was Mrs. Gallagher, my daughter's homeroom teacher. While sobbing, she told me the school was in lockdown as a mad high schooler got in with a gun. The mug fell from my hand and shattered on the kitchen tile. I grabbed my keys and raced out the door, already dialing 911. I ignored the traffic laws. The only thing in my head was Bloom, my daughter, my only child. She was all that was left of my wife, Claire, who died 5 years ago. I had raised Bloom alone, shielding her from everything. And now she was still in a school with a kid with a gun. The outside of the school was in total chaos. Police cruisers, ambulances, and fire trucks blocked the road with their flashing lights illuminating the pavement with violent streaks of red and blue. Officers in tactical gear yelled orders into the radio. Parents were gathered at the barricade yelling for their children. I shoved through the crowd, barely able to breathe.
Derek, step back!
It was Officer Brady from my neighborhood. I grabbed his sleeve, my voice raw.
My daughter's in there! She has asthma! She could suffocate! Let me in!
He shook his head firmly.
We have it under control. You need to stay back.
You don't understand,
I hissed.
If she panics, she could collapse. She needs me.
Brad's expression didn't soften.
We'll get her out. You just have to let us do our job.
For a moment, I stood there, fists clenched and my body shook with helpless rage. I could hear the cries of parents ringing in my ears, but I was not going to be still while my daughter was in there. I slipped back away from the crowd and gingerly walked around to the back of the building. I discovered the loading dock, which was completely empty. There were no officers and no barricade. That's when I saw it, a window, slightly open, big enough for me to squeeze through. I didn't hesitate. I pushed the window up, climbed up onto the ledge, and fell inside. My hands stung after the fall, but I didn't care. I was inside the building. The hallway was dark, with flashing emergency alarms projecting dim red lights. The sounds of faint sirens wailed in the background, but were muffled by the heavy silence. I moved slowly, hugging the wall. My breath came fast and shallow. Every step felt too loud. Suddenly, a loud gunshot made my ears ring. Down the corridor, windows shattered, sending glass cascading onto the tile. My legs locked for half a second, but then I moved, faster now, toward Bloom's classroom. I knew precisely where it was. Turn left, room 214. I spotted her through the window. She was crouched under a desk with four other children. Her little fingers held onto her inhaler, but she was gasping too much to use it currently. Her lips were pale, and her chest rose and fell in small, short breaths. I didn't care if I exposed myself. I opened the door.
Bloom!
I hurried to her and got to my knees. Her eyes widened in recognition, but there was no voice. Her fingers were fumbling with the inhaler.
Breathe, not baby, just like we practice.
I could hear the shake in my voice,
nice and slow.
Her hands were too shaky. I took her small hands and guided the inhaler to her lips.
Take a deep breath. Hold. Okay, count to three. That's my girl.
Behind me, a boy maybe 10 years old pulled at my sleeve, barely supported by his voice.
He's coming.
I stiffened. Footsteps. Heavy. Slow. Deliberately. The shadow appeared first, stretching against the wall. Then he stepped into view. A kid, probably no more than 17 or 18. His face was still a mess of zits, but his eyes were empty. He was carrying a shotgun in his hands. His eyes were flicking to the classroom door. He couldn't see me yet. Move, Derek. Now. I shoved Bloom into the wall, leaning against her. He lifted the gun and fired. The tube lights overhead shattered, exploding glass. The kids screamed, crying under their desks. Bloom was holding on to me, squeezing my arm with her fingernails. I didn't think. I lunged.
Hey!
I yelled, grabbing a chair and throwing it at him. The metal legs smashed into his ribs and he stumbled backwards, the shotgun falling out of his hands.
Run!
I screamed. The children took off, gripping one another, sobbing and finding their way to the hallway. Bloom's legs weren't holding her, and her air was short, but she still moved, breath short and quick.
Go, baby! Don't stop!
I shouted. The assailant regained his footing, charging me into the wall. I hit my head on the plaster and my eyesight blurred. He was on top of me, fists flying. I could taste blood. My ribs were screaming at me. My fingers closed around something cold sometime during the fight. The shotgun. I squeezed it and swung it wholeheartedly. Bone broke. Blood splattered. He sagged onto the tile, moaning. I outstretched my arm as I rolled off the floor. My ribs were writhing, and my knees wanted to fold in on themselves, but I forced myself to move. As I staggered out of the building, the first thing I saw was Bloom in Officer Brad's arms, crying uncontrollably with her face buried in his chest.
Bloom!
I yelped, my voice cracking. Her head snapped up. She broke free from Brad's hold and ran toward me, arms outstretched. I held on to her, gripping her so tightly. I worried that I might break her. I felt her tears soak my shirt. I kissed her forehead, again and again, swallowing back my own tears.
I'm here, baby. I have you. You're safe.
She was alive. She was safe. And so was I.